Hey, it's Chris Jones with the Jones Zone, and this episode of the podcast is brought to you by the Jones Zone at Keller Williams Realty. That's right, we sponsor our own podcast. So if you know of anybody looking to buy, sell, rent, or invest in residential real estate in the Charlotte, Rock Hill, Fort Mill area, have them connect with us on their favorite platform. Enjoy the show.
It's Chris and Brian Jones, your real estate advocates, community connectors, talking Charlotte and York County area real estate, and interviewing business owners, entrepreneurs, and community leaders. Welcome to the Jones Zone Podcast.
Count me down, Brian.
Three, two, and one.
Welcome to the Jones Zone Podcast. Brian, how's your day?
Great, man. Great. Doing well.
What did you think of the fight this weekend?
I called it.
Yeah. Did you watch it, Stephanie?
I did not.
Not like I called anything special. I said Floyd.
You predicted what all the experts predicted.
Yeah.
You just kind of went along with it.
I was smart enough to go along with it. Yeah. I didn't try to, you know.
All right. Well, today we are here with Stephanie Klitsch, the Assistant Director of Individual Advocacy at the Council for Children's Rights. Man, she's got to say that every time she introduces herself. The Council for Children's Rights provides advocacy and legal services for children in the area of mental health, delinquency, custody advocacy, special education, and abuse and neglect. Stephanie, welcome to the Jones Zone. Good to have you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
She went to Cornell.
No, she went to Yale.
I did not go to Yale.
Didn't go to Yale or Cornell.
I went to Cornell.
Oh, did you?
I'm looking at her right now. Oh, dummy.
I thought you were teasing.
Do some research, huh?
I forgot about her undergrad. She did go to Cornell, yes. Well, that was a brief introduction. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your personal story and then your background professionally and how you got into doing all that you're doing with the Council for Children's Rights?
Sure. I knew from a pretty early age that I wanted to work with kids. By middle school, I had made that decision, and I was also really interested in law school. And once I learned that you could do both, once I learned about child advocacy, I was just sold. And I chose my undergrad major so that I could set myself up really well to go to law school to end up working with kids. And so I'm in my dream job right now, which is pretty amazing. Out of law school, have been at the council for the past 5 years. While I was in undergrad, my school was heavily recruited for Teach for America. And so Teach for America, if you don't know, is a, they're focused on educational equity. And so they take recent college graduates and now professionals looking to change careers, and they place them in low-income classrooms in rural and urban school districts to teach for at least 2 years. And so I really was inspired by their mission, the idea that I could come out of undergrad and immediately make an impact on kids' lives and put me in a classroom and let me get to know kids and try to make a difference, try to close the achievement gap. I was sold on that as well. And so before I went to law school, I was placed in Charlotte to do Teach for America. So I taught in Charlotte for 2 years before I went to law school. And it was the hardest to
do. I was about to say, man, that is like, you want to be a teacher?
I had a friend who works for Teach of America in Dallas.
Okay.
Yeah, but he moved up pretty quick. He's like training teachers now.
Yeah, I had one that did it in Denver, and then he's now like an assistant principal or something, but that was probably 7 or 8 years ago, so.
Right. They really do look for teachers to stay in the classroom, but also for people, whether or not they stay in education, to remain committed to fighting the achievement gap, fighting educational inequity. And so when I was teaching, it just reconfirmed my desire to go to law school. I loved my students. I enjoyed being in the classroom. But for me and my personality, that one-on-one with a child is really what was inspiring to me. I really appreciated my time after school doing tutoring and getting to know kids. And it was hard as a teacher because you can't affect what's going on outside of their lives.
Yeah.
They bring a lot to the classroom, and that's really what I wanted to know and be able to work on. So I decided to still go to law school. And while I was in law school, because I knew what I wanted to do, I was very focused on preparing myself for that. So I did externships in child advocacy. We had a great clinic called the Youth and Education Law Project that was focused on special education and school discipline, a lot of what I do now in my work at council. And that really helped me once I graduated to start right in and feel like I had some basis to be able to begin advocating. So I am still learning every day. Yeah. There's still so much to learn and to try to be better. During my second year summer, so after my second year of law school, I got an internship at council. And the idea of being
here or out in California?
In Charlotte. Oh, okay. Yeah. My husband and I were interested in moving back, and the idea of being able to come back to the community where I taught and do this work was really meaningful to me. And I fell in love with the organization, and I was able to get a fellowship initially after law school, what's called a postgraduate public interest fellowship. So Stanford paid for me to work at council for the first year through the fellowship and to work on a project related to youth and foster care with emotional behavioral disabilities. Then I was lucky enough to be hired by council and be able to stay on there. And so that's where I've been ever since.
Yeah, Stanford paid for that? That's pretty interesting.
They did, through their fellowship program. Okay. So it's some law schools and some law firms like Skadden has this fellowship program. It's really hard coming out of law school to get a public interest position. I didn't really realize that at the beginning because you would think nonprofits, they want whoever they can get. But instead, there's only so much money to go around, and when there's an open position, nonprofits tend to hire somebody with the most experience, not that recent grad. And so this allows recent grads to be able to get into organizations.
So with your law degree, could you actually go be a lawyer right now?
I am.
Oh, so you are a lawyer right now, okay.
Yeah. So I'm in an attorney position at council.
Gotcha, okay. I was confused.
So you said you knew pretty early that you wanted to work with children. Was there a specific incident that made you think that, or do you just...
I think it was a variety of things. My mom worked with children in her business, and so I had, and I was able to teach some classes through that. I was always just interested in children's issues, and I loved to read, and the more that I understood about children growing up in circumstances very different from mine, and realizing how lucky I was to be born to the parents that I have and the opportunities that I have, I was really struck by how challenging it is for others and how their future can be limited by those circumstances. And it was something I felt strongly about for a long time and wanted to do work to make the lives of other kids better.
You made an interesting point about teachers or about home life affecting school life. Mm-hmm. Like, do teachers make that correlation often, or is that something you find yourself training teachers to do? Like, you know, if someone had just witnessed domestic violence, or they haven't eaten in 3 days, or, you know, I mean, is that an education piece that you guys provide for teachers?
Definitely. I think teachers generally know that the children come to classrooms from a variety of circumstances and try to do what they can, but often they don't have access to the information about what's going on at home. And for students, for instance, who have received special education, so they have an individualized education program.
IEP.
Yes, an IEP. I'm trying not to use too many acronyms today. There's often a lot going on, and the children that I work with who are in foster care, when we are at a meeting and we can share some information about what's going on in their lives, I've noticed huge changes in attitude for teachers, understanding that background. And so Johnny might not be throwing things across the room and disrupting because he just wants to be defiant. It might be because he can't concentrate on school because of what just happened last night. And so the more that teachers can understand of those circumstances, I think it helps them approach challenging situations with students in a new way.
The Wire season 4 touches upon like the school system and basically their home lives, bringing it into the school.
The show The Wire?
The show The Wire season 4. It's phenomenal. Have you ever seen it?
I haven't.
Okay, it's a good one. Each season talks about different, you know, themes, and season 4 touched upon how the school system is just failing right now. And like the inner city school district,
right.
Specifically. Jeez. Yeah.
That show's based in where? Baltimore?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll have to check that out.
So what does the Council for Children's Rights actually do, like in layman's terms?
Sure.
So obviously, you know, you can throw around the word words like advocacy or, you know, other stuff like that. But in layman's terms, what do you guys actually do there?
Sure. So we're a nonprofit located in Charlotte, and we have three different legal teams. So we have a custody advocacy program, and they, all of our legal teams are mostly court appointed. That's how we get involved with cases. For that team in family court, when there's a high conflict contested child custody situation, the judge can appoint our team to get involved to represent the child, the best interest of the children involved. They have a really neat system because we have a staff attorney and then two volunteers, a volunteer attorney and a volunteer advocate who all staff the case. They talk to the parents, they talk to the children, and they make recommendations to the court about what's in the child's best interest when it comes to the custody situation. We have a children's defense team where our attorneys serve as the public defender for children in Mecklenburg County charged with crimes. And as a part of that, also do mental health representation for children who are committed to the hospital or a residential treatment facility. And then we have the individual advocacy team, which is the team that I'm on. We do a couple different things too. We have a guardian ad litem program, which is different than the state program. So most children who are in foster care, they are appointed a guardian ad litem volunteer through the state program. But for certain kids who are in court because they've been charged with a crime, sometimes the judge realizes that there's enough going on at home where it's a situation where the child should be in foster care. And in those situations, a state GAL is not appointed. And so there was Sorry, guardian ad litem.
Yeah, okay. I'm getting confused. I know the listeners probably are. So
basically, for certain kids who end up in foster care through this kind of strange system, they were sitting at a table in the courtroom by themselves during hearings.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's very overwhelming for an attorney to be in court and for a child whose voice really needs to be heard. Through the local rules of the courts there, our agency is now appointed to serve as their guardian ad litem and attorney in those situations. And then the other part of our team is our Special Education Advocacy for Kids program, which the acronym is SPEAK. And so that's what I'm over at the agency. And we provide special education, school discipline, Section 504 advocacy for children. Most of our referrals come from the court, either through delinquency when kids are charged with crimes or through the child welfare system. So the children are in foster care. And so we get involved to try to address the educational situation. The child might have received a long-term suspension or might be continually reassigned to an alternative school or need an IEP or a Section 504 plan. They have a disability, but they've requested it and they're not getting that assistance from the school and need legal representation to help.
What are some of the parameters that you guys can represent someone on children or criminal charges? Like pretty much all cases?
For our children's defense team?
Yeah.
So yes, for all cases when it's a child in juvenile court, we are the public defender, so we're appointed. Parents can always choose to hire an attorney for their child, but our children's defense team is really unique in the state because we have social work involvement too, and so we're really experts in providing this representation, and so most families choose to continue to work with us. And so the only reason why, outside of a parent hiring somebody, that a child charged with a crime in Mecklenburg County wouldn't be represented by us is if there's a conflict. So there are multiple co-defendants, and so we can't represent all of them, and so there's a separate conflict list.
How do you guys work with the parents too? I mean, if you're doing all this work for the children, how important is it to provide services to the parents to make sure that nothing falls through the cracks and that everybody's on the same page?
Right. So it's dependent on the team how that works. So for the children's defense team, the child is the client of the attorney. It's their express interest, we call. They have the right to say, I want to go to trial, or I want to accept this agreement. And the parents are a huge member of that team, the juvenile court. What's so wonderful about it is it's focused on rehabilitation of children and families. And so they expect parents to be there. They expect them to help make sure that the child's getting the services that they need. But for our defense team attorneys, it's the child who's the actual client. For the SPEAK program, our special education work, we represent the parent and we represent them in their interest for their children's education. And so the more that we can do to educate families and parents, the better. That's a big part of our mission as well.
How do you guys incorporate the mental health aspect that you mentioned a little bit earlier? I mean, what does, for someone who has all these team members and stuff, what do those team members actually look like? Because you have social workers and therapists and you guys. I mean, it seems like a lot.
Yes, so often there can be a lot of people in the room. So, for instance, a child that I work with in foster care, they might have in the room of support, so we have monthly meetings where everybody gets together and talks about the needs of the child. It could be us, they'll have a social worker through the Department of Social Services, they'll have a guardian ad litem volunteer, they'll often have a foster parent, or if they're in a group home worker, case manager, a therapist. There's often a psychiatrist involved in the child's life if the child's on medication for their mental health needs. There's a lot of different
players. Yeah, it turns into a huge team.
Does. And sometimes that's great because the more ideas, the better people getting involved. Or sometimes people just do what is exactly what is their responsibility. Yeah. And then there can be gaps. And that's really upsetting when there's a whole bunch of people in a room and everybody's, oh, I thought you were going to do that. I thought you were going to do that. And it's the child who suffers.
Well, let's meet again next month to talk about who's going to do what. And I mean, before you know it, the school year's over. And
right.
We'll talk about First Wednesday Special Education Workshop. What are you guys doing with that?
Sure. So back in 2013, our team decided we need regular opportunities where we're training parents and caregivers and professionals. For a long time, we, if a provider agency or foster parents wanted information about educational advocacy, we would just come out and give training, but we wanted opportunities to regularly put on these trainings for parents to be able to access. And so this year we've expanded our training series a bit. So we're gonna be giving a free training from the first Wednesday of September all the way through the first Wednesday of May on different topics each month. They are located at our building in Charlotte, 601 East 5th Street, from noon to 1:30, just in our training rooms there. And our first one is on September 6th. It is Top Tips for a Successful Start to the School Year. Bit of a long title, but this is one of our new ones. Most of our trainings are focused on children with disabilities, whether they have an IEP or a 504 or might need one. And this training is broader than that. It's very much focused on parents and caregivers and what they can do to start off the school year well. One of the main reasons why we wanted to create this training is that with so much technology being involved in schools, there's a lot of data out there. There are apps, there are different assessments that are happening, and it can be overwhelming and confusing, and parents need to know that information so that they can best advocate for their child. So we'll be going over a lot of those assessments and also talking about how do you build good relationships with the school staff? How do you communicate effectively? As a lawyer, I'm often telling people, I jump around the room to try to get the point across, to put things in writing. It's human nature to just want to pick up the phone when you have an issue or to just stop by the principal's office, but then there's no paper trail. There really needs to be a paper trail. And so we talk about ways to make sure that there is that paper trail in case issues continue or you need to follow up.
Especially if they're at the point where they're involved with you guys and the team and all that.
Right.
Like you said, you know, people passing the buck in meetings and stuff. You know, Andrea and I got in a little bit of trouble this week. It's hard being a parent of a kid. So listen to this. Ethan, we got an email Friday morning from Ethan's teacher that said that she's going to go ahead and order Ethan a t-shirt because she didn't want him to be the only child without one.
Did you forget to pay for a t-shirt?
Yeah.
Wow.
First week of school, we're already those parents.
Oh, you know what? I forgot to fill out a Highlights magazine order form for Brenna.
Luckily, I could tell her, I said, don't worry, it's in his folder. Like, I just sent it, like we sent it in on the last day. So it was due Friday, I sent it in Friday. And she sent the email before she opened his folder. But I was like, man, we're already those parents. Like, we always make fun of ourselves because it's like, What do we got going on Thursday? What is it? It's a, you know, after school camp out. What's that? You know, we got to get it together. But it speaks to the challenges that just normal people have.
Right.
And everybody has. And then, you know, if you have whatever's going on in your life, all these circumstances that you're dealing with compounds that. So
it's overwhelming.
Yeah. What are some of the other topics that you guys have been going through?
So in October, we'll do a special education eligibility process. This is geared towards families who think that their child might need an IEP. And understanding what that process looks like, because it is a process. It's generally at least a 90-day process from the time that a parent submits a request for an evaluation. And then we'll talk about, for families who already have an IEP in place for their child, it's required to be reviewed at least once every school year. And so our November training is focused on how to prepare for that annual meeting. We do the same training topic twice in a year, in December and then in May. And this one is school discipline for children with disabilities. This is a hot topic.
I'd love to see that topic discussed in the 50s. Or you just pull out your ruler and you smack them on the hand a couple times. What's the problem?
Oh, it's especially for children with disabilities, it can be complicated because there is a certain type of IEP meeting that happens when a child has been suspended out of school for more than 10 days in a school year. Called a manifestation determination review meeting, an MDR, another acronym. And so by December, some of those meetings might be happening. By May, those meetings are often happening.
I remember those in my social work. They suspend the kid over and over and over. It's like, you know, 3 days now, 3 days here, 5 days.
Right.
So 10 days happens pretty quick with some of the kids, you know.
October.
And it's like, why do you keep suspending this kid over? You know he's going to do it or whatever. We're trying to work on it.
Right. And what we talk about is what is going to be more impactful for that student than the out-of-school suspensions.
Yeah.
And putting in place something called a behavior intervention plan, where we're really looking at why is the student acting out and what's good, what can be done to try to prevent
it. I remember
it.
That from my Winthrop days.
And so some other topics we'll do in the spring, special education conflict resolution, Section 504 plans, special education evaluations, and then strategies for a successful IEP meeting. And what I'd also like to mention is that we have these set trainings. Everybody is welcome to come. They're during lunchtime, so people can bring their lunch if they want to and participate. But we also know that it's not convenient for everyone. And so we are happy to go out to parent groups, go out to provider agencies, anybody that's interested in training on these topics. We'd love to go out and provide free training. And so they can contact our agency if they're interested.
Yeah, it's important. So it's pretty much anyone can come. Mm-hmm. It's free?
Yes.
As a nonprofit, how can people give back and how can people help you guys? I mean, do you guys have volunteer programs and stuff? Or?
We do. So our custody advocacy program has the main volunteer program that I talked about with those high conflict custody situations. And so attorneys can volunteer, but also just lay people can volunteer as well. And we're always looking for more volunteers. That's our main volunteer program. But we are always happy to receive donations. Private donations are is our biggest source of funding for the council.
What would a volunteer do?
On those custody cases?
Yeah.
So they help make the recommendations to the court. And so they go meet with the families, talk to the children, investigate the situation, look at records, and based on all that information, present that information to the judge.
How has, how has having a child of your own impacted all the work that you're doing?
Good question. I thought before I had my son that I had a lot of empathy for people, and now having him, the depth of emotion is so much greater. I give a lot of credit to families, especially of children with disabilities, and the fear and how complex the processes are. I think it's just brought it even more to light. And I'm sure that once he starts school, he's only 14 months now, it's going to be even more as a parent, I've been spending all this time trying to teach other parents about how you navigate that school system. Yeah. And then when it's me and my own child, I'm sure that will bring
it. Stephanie's going to get the email,
more.
Hey, I went ahead and bought your son a shirt. You did what? That'd be so funny. Yeah. It's interesting, man. I think that really... That might have been really kind of what put me out of social work, too. Not too, as in you're going to get out of it, but just it changed my perspective a whole lot.
Right.
Like, it changed when I had a stepson, and then it changed when I had my little daughter, too. And it was just like, man, it just, like, dealing with the stuff that I dealt with all day and then coming home to them, and I would just look at them and just be like, I'm so lucky that
Right. They're
not going through what those kids went through. And between that and the stress of the actual job, it just... I knew I had to find something else to do, so.
Right. The gratitude that I feel every day for how lucky I am.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. Well, you guys are doing great work. I applaud.
Thank you.
Applaud everything you guys are doing. Why don't you take the last minute or so just kind of take us home. Just give us some final points and how people can get involved and how people can reach out to you if they need to.
Great. So our website has a lot of information. That's www.cfcrights.org. And on our website, we have frequently asked questions in the area of education, a lot of different education topics, mental health, and delinquency. And so we encourage families to go on there. Lots of, even for children with disabilities, how they can advocate for their child. We have a very active Facebook page, so like us on Facebook,
okay.
Follow us on Twitter. Our different First Wednesdays trainings are on the calendar on Facebook. If you want to attend, the best ways to RSVP are either to call our office, which is 704-372-7961, or to send an email to iat@cfcrights.org and RSVP. If you're interested in receiving our emails where we are advertising our trainings, just send an email to that same email address, iat@cfcrights.org. And again, please reach out if anybody's interested in having us come out and do training.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Well, Stephanie Klitsch, Counselor for Children's Rights, thank you for coming on the Jones Zones.
Thanks
good
for
to
having
see you.
Me.
I've always wanted to debate a lawyer.
Go ahead.
What do you want to debate?
Thanks so much for listening to the Jones Zone podcast with Chris and Brian Jones. We'll catch you on the next episode.